Growcast swag packs are live for a limited time. Growcastpodcast.com/swagpack. And you will find the Smoker's swag pack with a Wolfman rolling tray, a Growcast nug jar, and a Growcast grinder. This grinder is sick. It's a ceramic coated. It's the best grinder you'll ever use. It is literally the best grinder that you will ever grind with. Growcastpodcast.com/swagpack to see the awesome Wolfman art, the wonderful green ceramic-coated Growcast grinder, and the Growcast nug jar. Go and get them before they're gone, folks. They will be gone shortly, limited time only, at growcastpodcast.com/swagpack. I had to let you guys know here. Today we have Queen of the Sun on the line. We are talking about harvesting. We're talking about hash. We're talking about everything in the world of Queen of the Sun. I know you're absolutely going to love it. Before we jump in, quick shout-out to AC Infinity, our favorite ventilation partners out there. Use code GROWCAST15 unlimited times at acinfinity.com to save 15%. And you can use that same code once on Amazon. Oh, that's nice. Use those codes. Make sure you send any GROWCAST code you use. Send us a snapshot of you using the code to be entered to win free seeds. Just hit us up on Instagram, or better yet, email contact@growcastpodcast.com. But AC Infinity is a great partner to utilize that with. They've got sexy tents. They've got the best fans in the game, all at acinfinity.com. Use code GROWCAST15. They've even got fabric pots, trimming scissors, everything you need. And 15% off with the code GROWCAST15. All right, let's get into it with Queen of the Sun. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GROWCAST. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, I urge you to share the show. Tell a grower about GROWCAST. We're on Spotify, we're on iTunes, we're everywhere. Make sure you're subscribed so you catch every episode, and give us a good rating and review if you could, please. I appreciate it. Today we have, good friend of the show from the West Coast, growing outside in the Tahoe region. We have Queen of the Sun. What's up, Alex Irons? What's cracking?
Oh, you know, it's summer solstice. Happy summer solstice, baby. First day, longest day of the year.
That's right.
Love it. Means you can get more work done.
Now, we have some, you know, team members that do a lot of their gardening according to astrology and astronomy. Now, what you're talking about, of course, is just the summer solstice, but do you subscribe to any of the fun stuff like popping seeds on a full moon or Mercury retrograde? Do you incorporate that into your gardening or not so much?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely try to plan with the moon cycle for germination of seeds and transplanting. And my thought on that is that the moon affects water cycle. I mean, gravity pulling how far and how close the moon is. And so, you know, it's supposed to have a higher success rate of germination if you have the water being pulled from the gravity of the moon.
Wow.
You know, I don't know how much truth is in it, but hey, people, we've been like, you know, agriculture has been around for 15,000 years and it originated with moon cycles and seasons like that. So
right.
Why not subscribe a little bit?
It's ancient wisdom. I will tell you this. They harvest coffee during full moon cycles. I guess it doesn't have to be under the full moon, but I was speaking to, when I was down in Colombia talking to Oscar at La Pradera, he said that the coffee is sweeter, the sugar, something about the sugar content during the full moon period, and how he always harvests. And it seemed like pretty well accepted. It didn't seem like a kind of woo-woo thing.
Yeah.
So it's just like, very interesting. I like that. I like that a lot. Anyways, so what are you up to now?
Today is our first day of harvest for the season. So it's always an exciting time. I mean, all of this work put in, we got our plants back in February. So this has been a long awaited day.
Nice.
And so far it's going great. I've been at it since 7 a.m. And, you know, I see a lot of different methods for harvesting, and people reach out and ask me, you know, what I think. And of course, a holistic approach is best, you know. Look at the entire plant, how much space you have, what the temperature is, your environment, all these different things, and then make your decision on how you're going to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, right now, we're in a little window between this heat wave. I'm sure everyone has been hearing about the West Coast is just like insane heat wave. Right. I've never experienced anything like this. Normally, our 100 degree weather is July, August, a little bit of September.
Right.
But we've had 108, 106, 105, I mean, regularly throughout June. All of last week was in the upper 108, 106. And so we're in a 4-day period where our high is in the 80s. So we kind of planned for our harvest to just be in that zone so that we're not, you know, out there in the freaking boiling heat. And it's also not good for the plants. You know, once you cut your plant down, you really don't want it to be in that high of heat. You know, terpenes are volatile. They start burning off at, you know, like 69, 68 degrees. So our space, we have our AC on set to 65. And we are harvesting specifically for weight, but there's different things that you would do for hash making. We briefly got to talk about this a little bit on your GrowCast TV, which thank you so much for having me on. That was super fun.
Oh yeah, that was totally fun. You got to come back. Are you going to have internet so you can come back soon?
Yeah, hopefully. They say July is when I should expect Starlink internet. So
all right,
fingers crossed.
We'll get you back then. We'll get you back then. But yeah, harvest. I have a lot of harvest questions. I don't know if you want to finish your train of thought and then I want to run some by you there.
You just share a question and then we can pick up.
Yeah. Oh, let me think of the big ones. How much are you concerned with trichome maturation or trichome ratio, color ratio and things like that versus just length of time, you know, flowering period or just the way the bud looks?
So I kind of try to combine all of those things. You know, when I get a strain, I have a journal that I keep notes on each strain. So I have like a chapter on each strain that I've ever grown. And so I write down what I read on the internet, you know, supposed flowering time, you know, what the genetics are. And then I think about where those genetics came from, like what their land race was. So what kind of environment were they bred in? A lot of like the new hype strains that are bred indoors,
yeah,
I find that are a lot more finicky.
Right.
But, you know, just keeping in mind those as a background, but then not relying on that specifically, taking into account your environment. So for me, with, you know, these really, really hot days, we're going to see the buds ripening a lot faster, hairs turning. That is a huge sign for me. If they're still pushing white hairs, I feel that it is still growing. It still has time to mature and ripen. And then also looking at the trichomes. And I don't come up with a specific percentage, but when I start seeing there are a few heads turning amber,
right,
then I know that we're getting close.
That's exactly it. You just described my exact... This is, I feel like I'm talking into a playback machine here. That's a great way of looking at it. So the amber appearing gives you the kind of window, but you're looking at the overall plant. As you said, white hairs being pushed, although some, I know that some don't turn like all others do, but yeah, I appreciate kind of looking at the overall maturation of the bud, not just the trichome ratio.
Yeah. I mean, so we went through this morning and we started our harvest different than we are doing now. It changed through the day because of taking into account the whole picture. So initially we went in our first row, we just cut down the entire plant, put it in a tote, brought it inside as quick as possible to cut it down to size in there and hang it. But once we got in to our hanging room and I was breaking down the plant, which I think is important. Let me say, I see some people who hang their entire plant up.
Sure.
And I just don't understand why. All of those stalks have a ton of water in them and there's so many different sizes. And I feel like you're going to get a more consistent drying in the specific time if you break all of your stalks down and your stems down to about the same size. And this is also really good for your space.
I agree with that.
I am hanging trellising from the ceiling and it goes almost down to the ground. And I cut each branch or each stalk down to about a foot, 6 inches to a foot, depending on maybe a little bit more, give or take. And basically you can, you know, cut a hook at the end of each branch and use that and just hang it up on the trellising, and you can pack a lot more into a space than if you're just hanging a whole plant, which maybe if you only have a few plants, you think that's easier, but really you put in so much work to get to this point. Why not just give it a little bit more babying and love at this final step?
A little bit more bucking down. Yeah, you know, I see a lot of people, it seems like kind of an older head thing to do, the whole plant hanging. I've definitely done it before, and it definitely takes longer in my experience. The thing that I'm concerned about, like you said, is oftentimes when you hang the whole plant, there's going to be like dead air in the middle of that plant. And one of the reasons it's nice to buck them down into straighter branches, like Queen of the Sun is describing, is because then you hang them on that line and you get a oscillating fan in the room, and then there's no buds touching each other. There's no dead spots of air.
Exactly.
So, and if you take off all the fan leaves and then hang a whole plant, it's not that you can't get away with it. You know, it's just something that I do not do myself. A lot of people do it, but I do find that it just takes longer, and I don't like the way that it hangs, I guess you could say.
Exactly. If you have the space, you know, where you can hang, but if you have a lot of plant count, really, yeah, where are you going to hang a whole plant, like a bunch of whole plants? That's going to take forever.
It's not space efficient either, you're right.
I'm so happy you said that. Remove all fan leaves, please. Remove the fan leaves, water leaves. If it doesn't have sugar, get rid of it.
Yeah.
I know that this kind of ties into just thinking about what you're going to do with your product at the end. And if you are making hash, bubble hash, or solvent, BHO or hydrocarbon hash, any kind of hash, it's going to turn out a lot better if you remove as much impurity prior to drying, and it'll make trimming easier as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, if you have all of that water leaf, that's just going, it dries and then it goes into your trim. And then if you're making your trim into hash, then you're going to just have a darker color. It's not going to taste as good. It'll taste more green. I don't know if you've ever had like that chlorophyll kind of taste.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so just thinking about these things, because there's a lot more that you can do with your trim after you're done. And so I think that that would be a great way to just talk about like bubble hash and what you're looking for when harvesting bubble hash.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know even just selecting cultivar can be a big decision when you're going for hash or bud weight, dry bud weight. It's kind of two different things. What do you see in the harvesting process that differs with going for hash versus bud?
So this is really exciting.
We'll be right back with Alex, Queen of the Sun. But before that, Rimrock Analytical, my choice sex testing partner. Visit rimrockanalytical.com. Use code GROWCAST for free shipping and get yourself easy-to-use sex testing kits, soil testing, and so much more at Rimrock Analytical. They just dropped their sex testing price, too. So I'm looking at $13 a test right now, lower if you order bulk, and boy, is that worth it. The test collection process is super simple, too. You just snip a little piece of your leaf, drop it in the centrifuge vial, and mail it on back with the prepaid shipping order. Rimrock Analytical will get your tests quickly and accurately, and they are very, very responsive. Use code GROWCAST to save on free shipping. And check out all the tests they have. Nutrient analysis, soil analysis, viroids, a lot of cool stuff they have, all at rimrockanalytical.com. Thank you to Rimrock. All right, let's get back to the Queen of the Sun. What do you see in the harvesting process that differs with going for hash versus bud?
So this is really exciting. I just talked, you know, I'm friends with Humboldt Seed Company, and we're going to work with them a little bit and do some R&D testing on some of their new auto strains that they're coming out with.
Nice.
And washing them and seeing how they do to make hash, because it's kind of like with autos specifically, a lot of the licensed market is putting them into the space for where their full terms would be, because you can get, you know, an auto run finished before your full terms need to be in the ground. But a lot of auto strains are not turning out as good as a photoperiod strain. The quality, the variance and phenotype, it's just not as uniform. And so the idea is that you could turn this into hash. Well, when you're selecting a strain for hash making, the shape of the trichome is really important.
Mm.
So when you look at a trichome under a microscope, you can see whether the head has a clear separation from the stalk.
Right.
So if the head looks more like a clear separation, like a mushroom kind of a thing, then that is going to be better for bubble hash and washing solventless.
Large defined heads, as opposed to this, the stalk kind of going up into a more cone-like shape.
Exactly.
Like that large, you almost see it, like you said, a mushroom cap, you almost see it curl under. I've heard Frenchie talk about that, them being ripe, when you see that kind of crease curl under where the stalk meets the head. So interesting.
Yeah. So the idea is when you're making bubble hash that you're washing, you know, your material and it's the heads that are falling off and that you're collecting that.
Right.
And so it makes a much more clear separation and you get a better quality, higher return from the heads that are clearly separated for bubble hash. So if you don't have that, if you don't find it, if your stalks are kind of just going into your trichome head, then maybe you want to try and do heptane or butane or ethanol, whatever hydrocarbon extract instead of a bubble hash.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah. And so if you are like me, I prefer smoking hash over flower any day. So it's important to me that when I'm harvesting, keeping this in mind to create the best end product for me and my husband. It's just, I'm a snob. I don't like having any burnt taste.
Right.
So when I smoke flower, I'm only the green hit. I don't take seconds or I have to just have the green hit.
Sure.
I know that's...
The plus one is the next step up from that, which is where you burn the green and then you give it one more and then you knock it out. Coined by producer Benny, the plus one. I mean, it's a wasteful tactic. If you're in an illegal state, you can't even imagine doing something like this. But when you have access to a lot of cannabis, when you grow your own, I don't think there's anything wrong with the green hit or the plus one. I'm not going to judge you here, Queen.
Thank you.
I do it too.
But
I'm guilty of it.
It's just you want to enjoy that flavor. And so when you have the hash, you every hit is like a green hit, you know?
No, that's a good point. You do avoid that ash buildup process. That is a very good point, whether it's bubble hash or rosin or whatever it may be. You just get the terp delivery every time.
Exactly. We're all about the terps, terp town, baby. So you know, I'm keeping all of this stuff in mind while I'm harvesting, and you really don't want to you want to be super gentle when you're harvesting. You don't want to, you know, smash the trichome heads at all or abrase them. So I prefer fresh frozen for bubble hash. I think that it creates a much better end product versus a cured bubble hash. I think they call it live resin here. I don't know if that's everywhere for French frozen.
Yes, sure. That seems to be the... I mean, listen, all these terms get muddled, right? But my understanding is if something is live, then it's been frozen before it was dried and cured.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, you can do both. I think that if you are specifically going for bubble hash, though, go ahead and do as much fresh frozen as you can.
Fresh frozen, right.
So not packing it in when you're storing it, just cut the buds off directly off the stalk into a bag. Don't try not to touch it as much as possible.
Damn.
When I first started making hash, we would vacuum seal the bags and I didn't think anything. I was just like, oh, you know, it's just going to get washed. Mm. And I wasn't really cognizant of the process that was going on. And so I kind of just smashed in as much into the vacuum seal bag as I could. And this, now I know, is a big no-no, and you want to just be gentle, leave air in there, space. And so you can vacuum seal if you want, it's going to be stored in the freezer for a while before you actually get to making the hash, but leave air. Don't suck all the air out.
You don't want to smash those trichomes, physically mash them down. That's undesirable is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So going through this process, you're harvesting, I sit and I have a tote on one side of me with everything that needs to be hung up. I have a tote underneath of me, between my legs, that I'm cutting leaves into. And then I have a tote with a turkey bag on the other side where I'm cutting in anything that's not bigger than like my thumbnail.
Ah, okay.
Any larf, anything like that, airy, undense bud is going to go directly into the bag, but will be fresh frozen.
Killer.
And so when we started harvesting this morning, we, like I said, we cut down the whole plant. And then as I was going through this process, I was seeing, okay, well, there's buds. All these lowers are actually pretty, they're pretty big. They're not, they're, I didn't really have anything that I wanted to throw into the fresh frozen bag, but they looked like they could go longer. So the next round into the greenhouse, we just cut just tops off. And we're leaving the rest of the plant to mature a few more days.
Nice. I'm so glad you brought up the partial harvest. You're a big fan of that. What do you find? Just that they definitely mature differently because of the amount of light they're receiving, especially in indoor setups. I see this. You know what I mean? Because you've got one little grow light. And then if you have a thick canopy, they look totally different. But do you also find like a bit of a yield difference, or is it too late at that point?
I've actually seen them get a little bit bigger, definitely.
Nice.
I wouldn't say like it's, I mean, it's hard to say what quantify that. I can qualify it as it looks bigger, but I don't know number, percentage, et cetera. But when I see the understory, the buds are much lighter in color.
Right.
They haven't even, hardly any of the hairs have turned. And so I left last year. We did an experiment to see if they would get discernibly bigger. And it appeared to me that they were able to grow much larger. And my thought is, if you're taking off all of the tops and cutting down the plant, well, it's still growing. It's still photosynthesizing and sugars are still moving up and down that plant. And so instead of going up to any other space, you have a chance for those sugars to be pushed into the lower buds.
Sure.
Hopefully stacking on a little bit more weight. And I would like to say, if you are planning on harvesting for making hash specifically, then you can go ahead and just cut that down and put it into fresh frozen right away. For me, I'm trying to get as much weight as possible to put into a pound versus hash material because, like I said, these lowers were already bigger than my thumbnail or whatever it is that you have. If you have a scale that works for you, just take that, keep that in mind when you're harvesting.
Yeah, and it's funny because you can grow two different cultivars the same exact way. And the lowers will come out vastly different in size and density. But it's good to have that backup plan because you're right. You don't want to be trimming all that little flower to try and, you know, whatever you're doing, selling it to a, let's just say you're giving it to a dispensary. Like nobody wants that little flower. But if you just process it into some high quality rosin or bubble hash or what have you.
Exactly.
Very, very nice. I do have a question backing it up a little bit. Back to the drying process. You said you don't like the physical disruption, the physical damage to the trichomes. Are you therefore not a fan of those dry baskets if you're going to be making hash? I mean, if you're going to be smoking a flower, it really shouldn't matter. But those dry baskets will, if you don't turn over your nugs enough, it'll flatten a whole side of your nug. And I imagine that it would flatten your trichomes.
Oh yeah. I don't use those. I like everything hanging freely, not touching anything. I've never used a drying rack. I've seen them, but I, for that reason of just wanting to keep it as untouched as possible, I have not used them. Have you used them?
Oh yeah. I used to use those like crazy and they work well, you know. When are they useful? They're useful when you do that partial harvest and you just took tops. So you don't really have like a good hook. You're just dealing with like, especially if you have large colas.
Yep.
You can just trim them up really quickly and roll them on into the dry basket and they work very, very well. But if you don't turn them over, you got to do it at least like two or three times during the process. Because if you don't turn them over, they will get flat on one side 100%.
Yeah. So I suppose if you are growing for yourself at home and you just have a few plants, that would be okay. But if you have, you know, 300 plants with six tops each and you have to move them a few times, you know what I'm saying? That would be a lot of time that could be spent doing something else in the garden.
Right. Always.
That's the thing. It's so hard. You have to, that's why I like to say the holistic and look at your whole situation because what works for one person is not going to work for another person because of their their whole picture, the big picture. Yeah. And so that tray, like you're saying, it worked great for you. For me, I couldn't imagine having, that would give me a, oh my gosh, I have to go in there and turn every single mug.
Oh, well, you can, and that's the thing. You wouldn't want to do this for hash making, but you can kind of, you know, roll them around in there. But if you're trying to preserve the trichomes, that's a bad idea. Again, the differences between selling flour or, you know, going for this wash type deal now.
Yeah.
This newfangled washing.
I know. And you know what? I went to a facility in Washington and toured it. I wish I remembered the name of the farm, but the guy is super cool. He's Jay Magilla on Instagram. And their whole flower room, everything that they grow is just going into pre-rolls and hash. It's amazing. It's like
nice.
He gets 90 pounds a room or something, and it's all just going to pre-rolls and hash. So it's crazy how each person, each grow, everything is completely unique to your situation. So when you are listening to these podcasts and trying to discern what the best method is for yourself, keep that in mind. Where is the person coming from that's telling you these things? What's their setup like? And what's your setup like? And what's going to work for you or not work for you?
100%. Yeah. Absolutely. Could not agree more.
Yeah. I mean, we're just going to let it go and see how, you know, what 4 days. We have a 4-day window before the heat waves back, and then it's back to 108.
Man.
So going to let those bottoms ride a little bit longer, see if they ripen up a little more. And you know, the more you ripen, the more amber trichomes you have, the darker your hash is going to come out. And a lot of people are looking for that clear, light colored hash. That's why you see hash makers whipping it. Like, why do you think, what is that, batter, whatever?
Yeah.
That became a thing because hash makers were trying to make it look lighter. They wanted to get more air in there, and it would take hash that might have been a little bit darker and get it to a lighter color.
Some of the best hash that I've smoked, some of the best rosin that I've smoked has been like nearly chocolate brown. I think it's a shame that we have this weird like fascination with lighter colored rosins because because we've all had dirty dark rosin before, but it really, if you have the good stuff of all different shades, I mean, I swear to God, some of the best stuff I've ever had was darker in color.
I agree. I think that it's just going to take consumer education. And that's why I'm glad we're having this conversation, because every situation is different. Trichomes are different. Some strains shouldn't be washed. Some of that dirty rosin that you smoke that's dark is because it's oxidized and been sitting around for who knows how long. Maybe like a grower was sitting on like pounds of trim and then is like, oh, I don't know what to do with it. And then ends up getting it turned into rosin way on down the line. And then that's why we associate this dark color with a poorer quality. But I've found some trichomes will even be purple. If you have a purple weed, you can even see the purpling in the stalk. So if you got a purple weed, of course your hash is going to come out darker.
True. That is absolutely true. And unfortunately, it doesn't come out purple. It should come out purple. That would be awesome.
Right. So we did a test wash in like a mason jar with some blueberry muffin crossed with lavender haze. Mm. And this is a few years ago, and it dropped out and separated and it was purple in the test jar. And I was like, wow, damn. I wish it would stay that way all the way through the process. That would be so cool.
Damn, that is cool. Hey, maybe we can wrap that up here with some cultivar talk. What are some of the most impressive cultivars you've personally run for hash making and or which ones would you not recommend?
You know what? Out of my career, the best hash making strain I ever grew was called the THC Bomb. And like its name, it was super potent. I mean, I think it tested at over 32% THC
Damn.
In the flower. And this is back in 2017. And I feel like nowadays we're keep seeing like over 30% is pretty common now in a lot of the hype strains. But that was like right 2017. This is like when I was just seeing THC hitting above 30% or hitting 30%. So I was blown away at 32.6, I think. And I had it run. I didn't do the hash on this. I paid a company, a lab here in California Shout out to Tri Chemistry. If you have ever, if you're in California at a dispensary, you have a chance to use or buy any of their products. They're a wonderful company. They started out as a toll processing lab for back in the medical day. They would just run your product for you. Now they have their own brand and everything they do is amazing. The guy has a PhD in chemistry. He was on the research team for finding the vaccine for Hep C. I mean, this guy, like in it for all the right reasons, medicinal, badass, super friendly, family guy too. But he ran our product, the THC bomb, and we got 26% return yield.
Whoa.
And that was on dry.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. THC bomb. Interesting. Is this bomb seeds? Is that the?
Yep.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. It looks beautiful.
I tried. I wrote the company. I wanted to find out what was in it. And they're like, these genetics are proprietary.
Oh, man. You son of a gun.
So I have no idea. But that was literally during, back in the medical days. My best-selling product was we had THC bomb that I sold in eights. And I did this really cool packaging that was like the Bob-ombs from Mario 64. on the box of the eight.
Yeah.
And then I wrote the story like in the pixelated gold foil letters, like it was Mario, and had the coins of how much it cost on there. It was super cool. And then Rhett came along and they're like, no childish graphics. They're like, Mario is for kids. I'm like, man, oh, if you're playing Mario, Super Mario, you're at least 26. I don't think that's...
yeah, that's a shame, man. We like the Bob-ombs. 30-plus year old.
Right? Yeah,
pot smoking. Stoners, yeah. It's, right, it's our thing. Get out of here, kid.
Yeah, it wasn't meant for you, kid. But yeah, that was amazing. 26%, I haven't really seen much... higher than that of anyone I've talked to who's making hash. And so I know, right?
That's huge.
Yeah. And that goes to show, you know, taking your time, removing those water leaves, making sure that you're harvesting it properly and then trimming it, you know, nicely, because you're going to have a higher percent return. Think about it. If you have a lot more water leaf or stuff in there that doesn't have any trichomes on it, then you're just diminishing your return on your yield.
Right. So that's how to get that number up higher, because it's not there in the first place.
Exactly.
Makes sense. Temperature, also a huge deal. You were talking about waiting for the heat wave. I mean, during processing and handling and everything, if you can, you're supposed to work in as cool as an environment as you can, right? I figured I'd shout that out real quick.
Yeah, definitely. So this is something that I've had like disagreements with other growers, and I had one guy tell me that he flash dries his weed at 90 degrees, takes 3 days.
No.
I know.
Never.
And you want to know? I'm not going to say the name of the farm, but they won the Emerald Cup like the last 5 years in a row, like a place top. And I'm like, shit. And you flash dry your weed in the Sahara Desert.
Yeesh. Wow. I mean, okay. I'll try it. I'll give it a shot. That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'm like, no, I'm trying to preserve those terpenes. But he argued with me and said, well, oxygen destroys terpenes as well. So the longer you have it drying, then the more oxidized it's going to get. And I'm like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know. That sounds crazy. Yeah. What I mean by I'd try it is I'd try his weed. I'm not going to try it out of my harvest. Let me be perfectly clear. I'd try his weed is what I meant. That's what I was saying.
Well, when we're off air, I'll tell you who it is. And then you can.
I used to do that shit in Humboldt when every day mattered and you were just trying to get it out because you had somebody who needed it. And then you just flash dry and it never turned out better. I'm sorry. I don't mean to crap on this guy, but it never turned out better when I had to do that. Crank up the dehumidifier, throw in the space heater so we can get this out in 3 days.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
That's basically exactly where he's at, what he's doing. Spot on.
Well, got to do what you got to do, but I don't know about optimal. I don't know. I don't know about that.
I'm not. I'm a slow and low kind of girl. I hang it up 65 degrees set on the AC.
Nice.
And try and keep that RH, that room humidity, down. I am okay with it being a little bit higher the first day, you know, like 60.
Sure.
And then I gradually work down to setting it to 40.
Whoa. Okay. Nice. Okay. So you do get it pretty dry. I like that.
Yeah, by the end, I do. And this is just, you know, I'm trying to get it to snap. I do the old snap test. I don't know how much science is behind that, but it's worked for me. You know, snap that stem. And if you hear it, good crack, then I take it down. I have tried a few different methods. One that we're doing this time around, we did it last year, is putting it into paper bags.
Sure.
And then curing it in a tote inside of a paper bag. And so the idea is kind of like, you know, I've heard of like tortillas or bread or whatever. It helps moderate your humidity with having that paper there. And I find that it keeps the weed really nice. And I don't like to use humidity packs. I just use a humidifier in my curing space so that I can weather, you know, in the beginning you have the dehum, and then afterward, cause where I'm at, you probably don't have to worry about that, but where I'm at in California, I probably have like 20 to 30% humidity outside. If
oh
that,
man,
it's
that's
so
insane.
Dry here.
Yeah. That's how it gets in the winter here. You got to watch it either way, really. But yeah, that sounds like it sounds a lot like, if you've heard my older episodes, that's how I used to cure, was in paper bags. And I also find you got to get the right paper bag. You got to get the like stiff, non-fuzzy paper bag, because some paper bags kind of smell and they'll like pick up the smell. I don't know. That's something that I observe with a paper bag. But yeah, Queen of the Sun, this was a wonderful little overview. Any final, we're up against it here. Any final thoughts before we close the show?
No, I mean, happy harvest, man. To me, you guys wish me luck.
Happy harvest to you indeed. A lot of this is going to make its way into Rosin. You'll keep us up to date on everything that you're doing. Yes?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everybody check out my new Instagram page, Honey Badger Ranch Rosin Club. It's all things hash, rosin. We're going to have some fun things coming out on our favorite holiday, 7/10.
Nice.
And yeah, I'll post more on what we make out of our harvest on that page.
Nice. Honey Badger Rosin Club and Queen of the Sun Grown on Instagram. If you don't follow her already, go and give her a follow now, everybody. Putting on my outro voice. That's when I start to talk all smooth. One more time. Smooth thank chat. You. Thank you, Alex. I appreciate you as always.
Yeah, man. It was great. Thanks for having me. You know, I love chatting with you. I could sit here all day.
I agree. We'll get you back on soon. Everybody loves the Queen of the Sun. And she shall be back. All hail the queen. This is Alexandria Irons and Jordan River signing off, saying be safe and grow smarter. That's our show for today. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Before we wrap it up, got to shout out Photon Tech Lighting. Growcastpodcast.com/photon will bring you right to their site. Code GROWCAST will save you 5% on these high-end, efficient, powerful LED bar style grow lights. And make sure to send us a snapshot of you using your code to be entered to win free seeds. Email that to contact@growcastpodcast.com. Photon Tech, baby. Have you seen it? Fantastic, affordable bar style lights. I love my Photon Tech. I love my Photon Tech controller. It keeps an eye on the temperature in both my spaces, and it controls my X600, which is a badass LED grow light. Efficient, powerful, top of the game. And you only buy as much controller as you need. So that's why I really like them. That's why they're a little bit more affordable, folks. All right, everybody. That's all for today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'm going to be traveling. I'll be at, I'm going to be in NorCal at the end of the month here in the beginning of August. So stay tuned for more of that. Make sure you grab your swag packs at growcastpodcast.com/swagpack before they're gone. Growcast Seed Co. is bumping along. We got some new drops coming. Lots of good news headed your way. But for now, have a good time in your garden, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.